Good afternoon, and thank you for supporting Lakeshore Public Radio at 89.1 FM on the dial and streaming worldwide at lakeshorepublicradio.org. My name is Tom Lounges, and today on Midwest Beats, a program all about music and the people who make it, we'll be doing a transatlantic call to jolly old England, and we'll be talking to Stuart Young. Stuart has been the manager of Emerson, Lake & Palmer for the duration of their career. He was a close friend of Mr. Greg Lake, and he has overseen a brand new 2CD, 2LP digital career anthology. So that's all coming up. We've got Stuart to talk about his years with ELP and about this brand new Greg Lake tribute. It's all coming up along with music from it after this. Good afternoon and welcome to Lakeshore Public Radio, 89.1 FM on the dial, streaming worldwide at lakeshorepublicradio.org. Take us with you wherever you go. I'm Tom Lounges, and it's time for Midwest Beats, a program all about music and the people who make it. Today, my guest is calling in from overseas. We've got a gentleman who has been part of the Emerson, Lake & Palmer career, I guess you'd say. He was their manager for a number of years. His name is Stuart Young. He'll be calling in from England. And Stuart was the guy who was instrumental in putting together this brand new deluxe package on the career retrospective of Mr. Greg Lake, one of the great talents of the classic rock, prog rock era. This is a vinyl. It's also a CD, and it's also available digital, aptly titled Greg Lake, the Anthology, A Musical Journey. And we will take you on the journey through Greg Lake's career in just a few minutes, well, through the course of the next hour or so, as we talk with Stuart and play songs from the anthology. Let's pick up right now and take you where it all began, sort of. At least that's the title of this. From the beginning, we go back to 1972. Emerson, Lake & Palmer was a fledgling band. They had only been around for about 2 years at this point. And this is off the Emerson, Lake & Palmer album trilogy, a staple in my catalog and my collection, and probably yours too. Emerson, Lake & Palmer, From the Beginning, right now on Midwest Beat.
Thank you.
You're listening to Midwest Beat. That seemed like a great place to start. After all, the song is called From the Beginning. We're going to take you from the beginning to the end of Greg Lake's career, just like this album does. It's a brand new album, came out in October, and it's a beautiful package, one of the most amazing packages I've seen on an anthology collection. It's called Greg Lake, The Anthology, A Musical Journey, and truly, this gentleman had quite the journey through the annals of rock and roll. Starting off in England, and staying based there most of his career, but he had so many different projects in the works. And joining us in just a second here is Mr. Stuart Young. Stuart was the manager of Emerson, Lake & Palmer for many years, a very close friend of Greg Lake, and as I understand it, was very instrumental in putting this amazing package, Greg Lake, The Anthology, A Musical Journey, together. And we're going to find out a lot more about Greg and about this process, because I've got to think it took quite some time to put this amazing collection together. Again, there are all sorts of different things involved in this. There are testimonials and remembrances from different members of the music business. There's some great photography in here, cover shots of all the different ELP projects that they released, and others, some of Greg's earlier work, and of course his work with King Crimson, and solo projects. The anthology is presented as a hardback set, which right there impressed me. It's a hardback double gatefold vinyl. It's also available as a hardback CD, and you can get it online for those of you that are in the digital world. And this is a collection of memories, a collection of music from throughout his career. It's not all inclusive, because that would take a 10 CD or 20 CD volume to cover the amount of music that this man created in his life. But we do tap into different aspects of it. And joining us right now is Stuart Young, the man I told you about, who was responsible for this, is also the manager for many years of ELP. Stuart, are you with us?
I'm with you. Nice to meet you, Tom.
Thank you
for having me.
We've been waiting a while to get you on. This came out in October here in the States, and I've got not only the CD, which you guys kindly sent me, but I went out and bought the vinyl the second it came out, because I am a big Greg fan, a big ELP fan, and after seeing the CD, I just had to get the large booklet so I could really envelop myself into the wonderful pictures and stories that are in it. Let's start with you and your connection. As I understand it, you came on board through Greg around 1969, 70, when ELP was getting their start and just getting going. Is that correct?
Actually, it was 1971.
71.
Yes. I was working for my father at the time, and he was an accountant. And Emerson, Lake & Palmer had put out their first album, and they put out their second album, Tarkus. And at that time, they needed to get some professional advice. And Greg Lake had looked up in a phone book for a firm of lawyers, and he contacted these lawyers, and they told him, you need to get an accountant, mm-hmm. And recommended my dad. And so when they set up the meeting, my father said to me, why don't you come? I've got this group coming to the office called Emerson, Lake & Palmer. And so I went to the meeting. That's when I first met the group. And in those days, they just started to headline their shows in America. And in England, it was a bit chaotic in that time, and the tax rates were very high. And so I had to set up a system, which I was doing. And I remember that I went to America in November of 1971, and they had just, that was the very first time they were playing Madison Square Gardens. And I went there with another accountant, and they gave us tickets, and we were about in the 10th row. We didn't really know what to expect. We got there, and then, of course, when the band started, it was all mayhem in the audience, and they were absolutely amazing. And that was the first time I ever saw them. And then what happened is, about 3 months after this, they fell out with their managers, and my task was to find them a new manager. And I interviewed lots of people, including David Geffen, mm-hmm. who was managing Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young, Bud Prager, who was managing Mountain in those days. He then went on to manage Foreigner, which actually I manage today, so it's a little coincidence. A manager called Peter Grant, who was the manager of Led Zeppelin.
Mm-hmm.
And what happened was that the band chose Peter to be the manager. But unfortunately, what happened was that it was leaked, and there was a cartoon in the New Musical Express, which was a very important music paper in England then, and they did a cartoon with Peter Grant's face like a whale, and inside there's two bands. One was Emerson, Lake & Palmer, and the other was Led Zeppelin. But Peter had neglected to tell Jimmy Page that he was doing it, and Jimmy got very upset. Very upset, and Peter couldn't do it. And at that stage, Greg had said to me, well, why don't you manage us?
Mm-hmm.
And I said, well, I don't know anything about this business, you know. So you think that's wise? And he said to me, oh, don't worry. It's very new, the business. We know your father and he's honest. And, you know, we'll help you. And I remember speaking to my dad, asking him, and he said, do it. And I was a little surprised he said that. But he said, the worst thing in life is to regret not having done something.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you should try it. And that's how I got involved in early, actually, probably March of 72.
And you,
and I was with them ever since.
You stayed with Greg when ELP went on their hiatus for a while. They regrouped. Of course, they worked with Cozy Powell. They had different incarnations and different projects. But you stayed attached to Greg personally, correct, and his projects?
I wasn't involved with Emerson, Lake & Powell.
Okay.
That group. I worked with him with his first two solo albums. But he wanted to try out something different, so he used somebody else at that time. But we always were very, very, very close friends. And I can honestly say best friends. But I was always in touch with him. And of course, I managed him when he did his solo. He did a one-man show. He did a thing with Keith Emerson where they did a two-man show. And right the way through to the end when, unfortunately, he was diagnosed with pancreatic cancer. In that period, he didn't think he was going to have a long time to live. He actually nearly lasted 3 years.
Wow.
From when he had the diagnosis. And you know, we used to get together once a month. And then when he got really ill, I went around there a lot and spent a lot of time. And in fact, we had talked about, you know, an anthology album. We talked about his book over those 3 years. And very close to the end, I saw him 3 days before he passed away. The last song he ever recorded was a re-record of a song called Closer to Believing. So I had a mix of it to play him. So I went to see him in the hospice where he had a very nice room and they were taking good care of him. But he was obviously very, very weak and we knew there wasn't long and he was in pain and all that stuff. And I said to him, would you like to hear it? And he said to me, yes, of course. So I brought a little portable sound system. And I set it up and started to play Closer to Believing. But I thought I had it a little loud.
Mm-hmm.
And I said to him, Oh, sorry, it's a bit too loud. Maybe I should turn it down. And he said, what do you mean? It's 4 o'clock in the afternoon. Turn it up. And I played him the song, and he listened to it. And he was very happy about it. Made me play it one more time, and he said, that's fine, go with that. And he had also done a record where he had done a live show in Piacenza, which he had done in 2012. And I had also got the mix of that show, the whole show. Mm-hmm. So I said, oh, do you feel well enough to hear this? And he said, yeah, sure. I mean, he'd heard previous mixes of that. So I played it to him, and he gave me some notes about two or three small changes he wanted done to it, which was, it was very moving at the time. And so that was the last time I saw him. And then I know he was visited by his wife and by his grandson. And it was coming up to Christmas. Mm-hmm. And he'd bought his grandson a bicycle, you know, which he'd chosen and all this stuff. And it had it delivered to where he was. And when his grandson turned up, was, I think, 5 or something like that. He rode round and round in the bicycle. And then Greg died the next day.
Wow.
But the thing that, I mean, obviously we were very close, but so when he called me to tell me of his condition, he said to me, I mean, obviously I was quite shocked, and he said, look, don't feel sad. He said, first of all, other than my family, I'm not going to tell anybody about this because I don't want like a Facebook kind of big thing about it. So mm-hmm. I want time to spend quality time with my family. He said, but the way I look at it is from where I came from. You know, he was brought up in very humble circumstances. I mean, he had loving parents, but at the beginning, they were very poor, weren't very comfortable financially, and they lived in a bit of a prefab asbestos type of place. And he said, from where I came from, who could have? I could never, ever imagine that I'd had a life like this where I could, through music that I love, make a living, play everywhere in the world, play up to 300,000 people in a concert, you know, be married for 40, I know he was married for nearly 50 years, mm-hmm. you know, have a grandson that I adore. I feel blessed. So please don't feel sorry about me.
What a great attitude to have.
Yeah. I'm not sure I could have that attitude personally, but it was. And throughout that 3 years, he was never bitter about the circumstances, you know. And he did his best, you know, to enjoy his grandson with his wife. Obviously, you know, it's a terrible disease, the pancreatic cancer, But I thought his attitude incredible. And of course, that was one of the reasons why I really wanted to do something special. Really for Greg's fans, mm-hmm. of course. And I wanted to have something that was beautiful, but in particular for his grandson, who he absolutely adored, and his grandson absolutely adored him, still remembers everything that they did together.
Is his grandson pursuing music as well, or is he not in the music end?
He's not. He's still, you know, I think he's 59 now.
Okay.
So I'm not sure that he's pursuing music at this time, you know.
Okay. The live...
I think he's into sports and things like that.
The live concert from Italy, was that ever released?
It was released only in Italy.
I've heard about it, but I've never seen it or found it anywhere. That's why I was asking.
It was live at the Teatro Municipale Piacenza, which is a beautiful city in Italy. And Greg was given the key to the city, and they celebrate every year, Greg, there.
Wow.
And so, yeah, no, it was, as I said, it was released just in Italy. It's a very nice album, beautifully done.
Is it available through his website, greglake.com?
I'm not sure, but okay. I can research that. But I am speaking to the guy, because the guy who put it out, I am talking to him, and I can get them to send you a copy.
I would love that. Like the Holy Grail for us. We've heard about it here, but I've never seen it. I've never found it at a distributor or a store.
Yeah. So
that would be wonderful.
I'll try and get it distributed. But I can definitely send you one if you get the right address to the, you know, I think your producer must have the guy who set this up.
Yeah, that would be Chip. Yeah, Chip is
the... Oh, Chip, exactly.
Right.
Definitely Chip.
Okay. Let's play a song from this. And since you talked about how moving that last encounter was when you saw Greg and played Closer to Believing, I'd like to share that with my listeners. And if you would wait with us, we'll be back to talk on the other side. The final version from 2016, Closer to Believing, it wraps up the first album, first disc of Greg Lake, the anthology, A Musical Journey.
an extremist. Don't believe it till you've held it. Life is seldom what it seems. Lay your heart upon the table in the shuffling of dreams. Remember who on earth you are.
Final song of a great career, Greg Lake, Closer to Believing. That's from 2016, the year we lost Greg. On the phone with me here on Lakeshore Midwest Beat is a gentleman named Stuart Young, who is a part of this collection, putting it all together, a part of Greg's life and a close friend. And when did he record that he was so ill when he finally
heard
it?
He would have recorded that a few years prior.
Okay.
Because he recorded some stuff. I can't remember. He'd recorded it before he'd been diagnosed. I know that. Maybe in the year. So, I'm not sure exactly. I had heard a rough of it when I'd been round at his house.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'd asked him about it, and then we managed to get it finished. But no, he had recorded a few years before.
Okay.
Could not possibly have done it in the last year of his life.
I was going to say he sounded in perfect form there.
Yeah, no, he was.
I was going to say, how did he pull that one off? But that makes more sense then.
No, it did.
We're listening to selections from Greg Lake, the Anthology of Musical Journey, and there are 33 songs on this collection, on CD, on digital, and of course vinyl. We're listening to the CD version. I've got the vinyl in front of me, but it's a beautiful package. I've got to wonder, Stuart, with all the amount of material that was out there, going all the way back to the early days with the Shy Limbs, King Crimson, ELP, and of course the solo works, how did you decide what to include on this, and who was involved in the think tank in putting this together?
Well, but basically, there is a guy in Italy called Max Marchini, and he was the one that did the recording in Piacenza that we talked about earlier.
Okay.
And Greg had some discussions with him about doing an anthology. So a lot of some of these ideas I wanted to do the perfect anthology, but when I was also speaking to Max, and of course I spoke to Greg's wife to see what special thought she had, because I wanted obviously her to be happy and the family to be happy.
Mm-hmm.
And I found out that Greg had wanted the album to start with a King Crimson song called Peace. And he'd wanted to finish with that song. And that was one of Greg's definite wishes. So I knew I had that to start and end with. And then I thought it was important to show kind of how he grew up. And that's why we included a song from The Shame and from The Shy Limbs before we got to King Crimson proper. And when King Crimson is controlled by Robert Fripp, and Robert and Greg went to the same guitar teacher, as did Andy Summers, by the way.
Oh, okay.
And so the interesting story about King Crimson is that, you know, they had been, you know, grown up together, and they were friends. And Robert was putting a group together called King Crimson, and he had a record deal. So he called up Greg and said to Greg, he used to call him Gregory. He would say, Gregory, I've got this record deal, I've got this group, and I'd love you to be the singer. And Greg said, oh, yeah, well, that sounds good. And then Robert's voice changed slightly, and he said, only problem, Greg, is we need a bass player as well. I'm going to be playing guitar. So, and Greg was a guitar player,
mm-hmm.
quite a good guitar player. So he said, well, I need you to be the bass player. So Greg, he'd never played bass, but he thought, well, they got a record deal. So, okay, can't be so difficult. And so he agreed to join the band. Of course, he found out in the first day of rehearsals, because of the drummer Michael Giles of King Crimson, was about one of the world's great drummers, was throwing his drumsticks at him because he kept playing the parts, you know, playing things he shouldn't be playing. And so he learned very, very fast. So I thought it was very important to have, you know, to deal with King Crimson.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I contacted Robert, he had this recording from San Francisco, from the Fillmore, from 1969. And it was an interesting recording because that was the day when Greg and Keith Emerson met and went to the bar after the show and decided they were going to... Because what happened with King Crimson is that three of the guys in the band hated touring, and they said to Robert, we're going to leave the band. So the band was in trouble. It was finishing. Robert wanted to continue it, obviously. And Greg thought these guys were so important, you know, because they'd all shared it getting there. And then when Keith told him, listen, you know, I'm looking for something new because I've gone as far as I can with the Knights. And Keith said to him, why don't we do something? So that's how the group started. So I thought it was quite important to put the Court of the Crimson King with King Crimson on the album.
Wow. Now, how long was he with King Crimson? That's a group that's always been in flux. It's constantly evolving and becoming a different creature. It's a living band, if you will.
Yes. Well, he was with King Crimson as a member for the first album, basically, which was in the Court of the Crimson King,
right?
Which obviously exploded in America, and the band were happening. It was a very important album. Then they split up, and then Robert put King Crimson Part Two together. But he needed a singer to sing some of the songs. So although Greg was starting the ELP thing, he sang on the second album some of the songs.
Okay.
King Crimson, but he wasn't a group member because he was following his new day job, which was ELP.
What got Greg into music? You mentioned that they started with the same guitar teacher, Robert and Andy and him. But what was the impetus that made Greg say, this is what I want to do for a career? I don't want to work on the docks, or I don't want to work in a factory, or I don't want to be an accountant or whatever. What made him pick up a guitar and say, this is what I want with my life?
I think I remember him telling me that his grandmother played the piano, and that they bought him a guitar when he was quite young, and he fell in love with it. And he always, from a very early stage, he always wanted to be a musician. And at school in England in that period, you had like probably the same in the States. You had a careers master, you know, and they would talk to you about your career. So they went round the class asking everybody what they're going to be. And Greg said he's going to be a musician. And the career master said, no, you need to get a real job. That's not going to work.
We've all heard that.
Yeah, I got a copy of one of Greg's school reports. And it put on music, it put average. I always thought that was a very telling statement.
Right.
As far as the music for the school. So he just had a passion for music. Obviously, he had an affinity for it. He was obviously gifted at an early age. The guitar teacher, Don, was called Don Strike. He was a very tough teacher. Greg told me that when he would have his lessons, if he would play something wrong, he'd wrap him around the knuckles with his ruler.
Mm-hmm.
But he was a very nice guy, and he gave Greg quite a few tips, which he used to all his life. And one of them was, I remember he told me that the guy said, listen, when you play for people who've come to see you, you've got to play what they want to hear. Of course, you can play some stuff for yourself, but remember, don't forget why they are here and play stuff they want to hear. And I remember when any time ELP or anything would ever do any shows, they would always play the songs that had done well. They never got bored with playing Lucky Man, for example, or From the Beginning, the song you started with.
Mm-hmm.
But he learned that from his guitar teacher.
Wow. Greg's career in many ways, not many ways, but in at least one way, parallels that of Paul McCartney, who himself was a guitar player that kind of got in the corner, painted in the corner to become a bass player, yet became very well known for that. And Greg is probably one of the very best bass players in rock and roll as we look back at all of his accomplishments. Was he comfortable with that? I know he played solo acoustics and things on his own albums, and had done quite a bit of that as well. But he was known as a bass player. Did it bother him that he was primarily a bass player in the public eye?
No, not really. No, I don't think so. He never told me he was, and I didn't know very much about music when I first met him. Of course, I love music, but I wasn't an accomplished musician or something like this. And so I used to spend a lot of time with him when he would play me music and explain to me things. And he always felt that the bass was an incredibly important part of the music.
Okay.
So I don't think the answer to your question is that, no, I don't think he felt uncomfortable. But he would always, there would always be one song. In the set, he'd always do a few songs where he would play guitar as well. But it was always a little difficult in the band because, obviously, they were a three-piece.
Right.
So if he's playing guitar, there's no bass, and that's why Keith would play the bass parts on
through
his
the keys.
Foot, you know, on the pedals.
Right.
But it wasn't the same. And in those days, everything was live. There was no tape that they use now.
I remember interviewing Greg. Oh, gosh. They came to the Star Plaza Theater here in Maryville, Indiana. And it was the tour where they resurrected the Moog synthesizer. And Keith was on stage, and it took them forever to patch in everything. And I remember talking to Greg because Keith didn't want to do interviews at all. And Greg said, well, I'll be happy to go on the radio. So we did a radio interview to promote that show. And he just seemed so happy just to be on stage that after all these years and all these accomplishments, that people still found him and their music relevant and important. And he just seemed very grateful, very giving of himself to the fans. And that was my perception of my one encounter with him. Was he always accessible and appreciative of everything?
Yeah. He loved playing concerts. He loved people. You know, he was a very, you know, he loved people, and he was always happy with people. And, I think he never had a problem. He liked doing interviews. He liked meeting new people. He would spend a lot of time talking to the fans if they came back after the show. I think what you saw is what you get. I mean, obviously, in his professional life, he was a perfectionist, for sure, and he would fight to get what he thought was right. So, but no, he was a very gregarious, charismatic man.
Let's talk about his songwriting. If I'm correct, if I read this right in the anthology, "Lucky Man" was the first song he wrote. Is that correct?
Yeah. That is correct.
Wow. I mean,
he told me he was quite young when he wrote it. I don't know if he was 13 or something. He was very young.
He really hit it out of the ballpark with the very first song then. Did he say what inspired him to write? That's a song that comes with a lot of living behind it to reflect back. On the meaning of that song, the depth of that song, and the passion of that song, it seems like he would have had to have been a very old soul to create something like that.
Well, I think he was an old soul, now you mention it to me. He was a very wise old man. And I think, you know, his lyrics tell him that. But the actual ironic thing is he'd written the song, and it never come out. And when the bands, Emerson, Lake & Palmer, were recording their first album, they ran out of material, you know, and so they were a song light. And everybody was looking around. And then Greg said, well, you know, I don't know if this song is right. I got this song, you know, I was very young when I wrote it, but I've never used it.
Wow.
You know, and he played it to them just on guitar, acoustic guitar. And they thought, they weren't sure about it. Keith went to the pub, you know, Carl was just hanging in the studio, and Greg started recording, and he started putting down parts, you know, kept putting down parts, and Carl said, "Do you want me to put down some drums?" And he said, "Oh, that would be nice." Carl put down the drums, and Greg then, you know, put his harmonies, the lead guitar, everything, and it sounded really great. Keith came back from the pub, and Greg said, "I've been working. Listen to this." And Keith listened to it. He was floored by it, but he thought, "Oh, well, there's nowhere really. I don't know where what I can do on this." You know, and Greg said, "Well, maybe, you know, that new synthesizer you got, why don't you try something at the end?" So he had hardly played it, Keith. So they set it up, they started the recording, and Keith played, and then when he finished, Greg was jumping up and down and said, "That's amazing, we got it, rushed out and said, "Come and listen." And Keith said, I was warming up. He said, "I can do it much better." And Greg said, "Look, we got no track," because in those days when they recorded, they weren't like today where you got tracks after tracks.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you only had, I think, 8 tracks. So basically said, if we record you, I'm going to lose it. Come and listen to it." And that is the solo that is on the record.
Wow. That's pure magic. Wow, to have something come together.
The interesting thing that tells you is that Greg was not only a great songwriter, but he was a great producer, and because he was able to recognize that was a great part that Keith played. Keith, I mean, he was a great player, of course.
Mm-hmm.
You know, of course, Keith always felt he could do something better, but then. In the end of it, that solo became almost like a part to the song.
Wow. Well, let's play that.
Greg recognized it on one ear.
Let's play that. Again, we are featuring music from the brand new anthology, Greg Lake, the Anthology Musical Journey. This takes you through this gentleman's career. There's 33 songs on vinyl, on CD. It's available digital. Find out more information at greglake.com. And by all means, when you get this, you're going to want to take it to your music room. You're going to want to sit down with the headphones on, and you're going to want to look at this amazing book. We'll talk about the photos and putting the booklet together in just a moment. But right now, let's go back to that classic album, Lucky Man. This is from the first album, Emerson, Lake & Palmer, 1970, A Song That Came Together by Serendipity. We'll be back in just a moment with Stuart.
He had white horses and ladies by the score, all dressed in satin and waiting by the door. Lucky man he was. Ooh, what a lucky man he was. White lace and feathers, they made up his bed. A gold-covered mattress on which he was led.
Ooh, what a lucky man he was. Ooh, what a lucky man he was. Honor.
and his glory, the people would sing.
Ooh, what a lucky man he was. Ooh, what a lucky man he was. A bullet had found him, his blood ran as he cried. No money could save him, so he lay down and he died. Ooh, what a lucky man he was. Ooh, what a lucky man he was.
Certainly not bad for a warm-up exercise.